Hey everyone, I'm Jay.
I'm Sophia.
I'm Joyce.
And I'm Scott, and welcome to Witches Betwixt.
So today we're going to be talking about mental health. And essentially, what we want to drive home in this particular episode is that mental health affects both the queer community as well as the witch community, and this podcast serves both of those communities. And we really feel like it's important to discuss the issue of mental health and how it affects both of those communities. Mental health is a spectrum of experience, just like being queer, queer identity, and just like magic and practicing witchcraft and any other spiritual or metaphysical practices that kind of fall under that umbrella. So that's kind of what we want to get into today. I guess I will kind of start off just a little bit that I am a bit more of a, I guess I was raised with that pull yourself up by your bootstraps mentality. So with a lot of these things that people may talk about in this episode, I may not feel the same. So, I guess I'm a little bit of devil's advocate character in this episode. So I think we just kind of go from there. So does anyone kind of want to start off and just talk about like maybe their experience with mental health, like what they're going through right now, where they were before, how it affects their life?
I'll go. I don't mind, at all. I've lived with, mental health pretty much my entire life. I have a background of, domestic abuse, that I lived with for a very long time, and it caused a lot of issues over the years, things that I just was in my formative years that I wasn't able to, process correctly. And, you know, now I live with chronic depression and panic and anxiety, other stuff too. But it's funny because, you know, as far as witchcraft goes in relation to my mental health, I've found that, you know, being so young, I was 10 years old when I got into witchcraft, and I was younger when I started having spiritual experiences, but Wicca or witchcraft came into my life at 10. I noticed how it gave me purpose. It helped me to give me something to believe in, to hold on to. You know, I remember I was 8 years old having some thoughts about not wanting to live anymore, you know. So it was for me, witchcraft has a kind of, it's more than sentiment. I always kind of say it kind of saved my life, you know. And I've always been really appreciative to my spirits and to you know, just to all the things that I work with spiritually, for that reason. And it's also not to say that mental health hasn't, because it's funny, because in some ways mental health has expanded upon my witchcraft in the sense of how that darkness, it's kind of, my life is kind of, it's sort of trained me in a way. It taught me about myself, and it taught me how capable I was, how strong I really am, you know, cause you know, when you're facing those inner demons and you're 8 years old and you're having those thoughts, and you know, anything realistically could have happened, but instead I was like, no, here is this light and I'm going to keep it because it's mine. You know, this is my light. This is mine. It belongs to me, you know? And it's not to say that, like I was saying, that my mental illness hasn't negatively impacted my craft either, because it has. Like, there are times where meditation's really hard for me. Generally, focusing is really difficult for me. Sometimes, you know, like when I'm doing a spell, I have to stop and kind of start over, because I have a hard time. As you know, when you're doing spell work, you have to, you know, your will, your intent, and then you have to be able to kind of channel that energy into the working. And sometimes that part, I can't hold the image, that creative image in my mind. I can't hold that to put it into the spell. So on days where I'm doing bad, you know, like there are some days where like if I'm trying to do a reading or like if people want readings, I have to cancel. So I'm like, I'm having a bad mental health day. This just can't happen, you know, just because my vision becomes clouded, you know. So it's definitely created a mountain that in some ways I appreciate and in some ways I kind of resent. But, you know, yeah. I was lucky because only in the last year did I finally find a therapist, and only like 2 weeks ago, maybe 3 weeks ago, did I finally mention to her about my spiritual experiences. And I was very nervous. I really was. I really didn't think she was going to take it kindly. I really thought she was just going to be like, oh, well, this is more issue. You know, I thought she was going to read that as more, you know, more psychosis, you know. And instead she was very accepting and it didn't faze her. She didn't react, not negatively, not positively. She just smiled. So I guess positively, she just smiled and let me talk. And, you know, and she was like, no, she said, I believe that there are people who can sense or get a feeling for whatever you know, unperceivable, whatever. So she was very open-minded, and it was very nice to talk to her. And she even mentioned it in therapy about sensitive people. Sometimes we experience our mental illness even more, you know, especially for people who are very heart-centered, who are very empathic or empathetic towards others. You know, so that kind of was a blessing too, having a therapist to understand where I was coming from. And then as far as like the queer community goes, honestly, it hasn't, that part wasn't the best experience. Gay men tend to be really harsh about mental illness, especially like when you're dating. They don't want anything to do with you if you claim to have any kind of mental health problem at all. Like, you know, they somehow see you as defective. You know, they see you as broken and unattractive. And it was really insulting and really hurtful. And in some ways it benefited me because it also made me realize that a lot of those guys are the ones that were fetishizing me as a person who also lives in a bigger body. And, you know, while it's one thing to love me for me, but I don't want to, I'm not a fetish. You know what I'm saying? Like, I would imagine the trans and non-binary communities would know all about that. You know, so I guess I'm trying to get at is I honor the hardship that it's put me through, because although, you know, I have bad days where I can't get out of the bed, where I try to go out the front door and I'm like, the world is too scary, agoraphobia, I'm going to run upstairs. You know, but then there are days where I'm kind of like, no, I got this, you know, I'm going to breathe and I'm going to do my mindfulness techniques and I'm going to feel myself where I am and not be in yesterday, not be in tomorrow, but I'm going to be here right now. And I bring myself down. So I'm appreciative of my experiences. I know it sounds funny because like, I don't have like, I kind of resent it. Don't get me wrong. Like, it's annoying. I wish I didn't have to go through any of what I went through, but I appreciate it because it made me stronger.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So, who wants to go next? You, Sophia, you feel like going or Joyce? Or?
I mean, I could, I got a lot of shit.
Cause you kind of took to the, you kind of had like a response to when Scott was talking about like people fetishizing and things like that.
Well, as a trans girl, I'll tell you this, the world can be real harsh to you. And God, mental health, it's weird because Scott was saying how in the gay man community, it's like if you have mental health, people don't want anything to do with you. it's almost like you can't meet a trans girl who doesn't struggle with mental health. I don't think I've met anybody yet in my personal experience who didn't deal with depression or anxiety or struggle with addiction issues or have PTSD, because the world treats you really harshly from a very young age. I'm not going to go into too heavy of detail about my stuff because it was a lot, and it's a lot of different stuff. I had issues from being a queer kid, being a trans girl, from being a witch and seeing shit I shouldn't, you know. And you learn to just kind of deal with everything always being off, or at least I have. I guess that's the feeling of what PTSD is like a little bit, and I deal with that a lot. And I'm on the autism spectrum as well, which I was never diagnosed as a child, because there's such a heavy stigma of taking a kid to a therapist. It was used as a threat instead, actually. Behavioral, I'll take you to go get diagnosed with ADD or whatever they think.
That was my experience as a kid, and I think that kind of shaped how I am now. Not in a good way.
And it really fucks with you, because you start to treat mental health with a stigma, because people present it as a threat, not like a way to understand what you're dealing with and how to find a healthy way to cope with it or learn to deal with it. Like getting diagnosed with autism, for example, I stopped beating myself up for so many things that I didn't need to. Like when I need to keep stuff in a routine for me, because it helps me feel efficient and focused. And if someone's switched my stuff up on me, I become agitated and I need to like reset it. And people think I'm like nitpicking and trying to control them. But it's like I rely on that routine to keep myself grounded in what I'm doing. And like I don't get upset at myself for experiencing stimuli overload when I'm in like a really busy space and I start getting tunnel vision, instead of like thinking I'm having a health issue, because I've had some serious health issues as well. I worry about body failure and stuff like that. So instead of worrying about that as much, I've come to recognize it as like sensory overload, and I've found ways to just deal with it better. I don't go into loud spaces where people are screaming as much. I avoid bars that are loud. Clubs I can only do usually with intoxicants and stuff. And I also kind of heavily struggle with addiction, and just like with small things. I'm not like messing around with opioids, but I smoke more weed than I should, and it's been a long time thing, and I can't quit that shit to save myself sometimes, and it's a really frustrating thing. And I got chronic pain, which makes me want to smoke it more, because I was in a shitty abusive construction environment that fucked up my body. So got like a spiral of problems, and like I find like it's like Scott said, magic saved my life, because it helped me not only come out but also cope with more shit than I should be able to. Like, when I saw my psychiatrist, he asked me, like, how I'm able to stay together as well as I am. And I straight up told him that I study the occult. And I explained, I think I almost sold him on it, to be honest. I talked about how it's, like, hermetic and how it's examining all these systems that gave rise to a lot of modern religious movements, and dissecting their roots and what they actually are in their processes, and using it as a system of understanding to place yourself within the universe. And he just was like this too well thought out to even get mad at, so I don't know.
So we'll see him at the next witches gathering.
I mean, maybe not, because he made a transphobic comment, even though he was trying to be nice about it. He said, oh, I would have thought that you were a real woman had I not known. And it's like he was at the Three Bridges Clinic in Vancouver, which was like the main clinic for trans people. And he's a free doctor for trans people to see without paying. He should damn well know better, right? So even in places where you think you're getting the most up-to-the-age access, you're still dealing with shitty old white guys who don't know heads from tails, and they sometimes treat you like you're a science experiment, and it sucks. But magic helped me survive all of that, and so did focusing on the good, you know? Because it's so easy to get lost in depression. Like, a year ago, I was in a really bad place. I was almost homeless. I was borrowing money from family just to pay rent because I didn't have a job. I was horribly depressed. I had a relationship end in a very hurt way for me. And although I'm not upset at the other person, I definitely had to like move on and deal with a lot of shit. And in the end, it was focusing on what I had instead of what I didn't have, you know? And a lot of that was magic and being able to feel like I have a reason to keep going. And like some days, even now when I'm depressed, I like think about doing a podcast and how that helps me get through a shitty day when I feel like I don't have a future, you know? Because if anything, magic's given me a sense of agency with which I can directly take control of my life in a way that nothing else has ever given me that. And I don't need to rely on somebody else to take care of me. It's my own action, and I feel really freed by it. And by searching, I've kind of become myself, and there's no better way to put it, but it's almost like being trans is the act of being magic, and I used magic to help with mental health. So, yeah, that's a little bit about me.
I guess that means I'm next, huh?
If you want to.
It's up to you. I mean, what's interesting for you, Joyce, is you, the three of us, we've had magic growing, like, up until now. You're just starting to experience that.
Exactly, and my mental health issues started, 25 years ago. that is something that was kept popping in my head. I was like, all you guys had, had that assistance, and I can only hope that in the future, magic will offer me some type of assistance. I think I, honestly, my, I guess you could say, coping mechanism to give background, anxiety, borderline personality disorder. I really controlled that. I controlled that through just kind of sheer self-will and copious amounts of marijuana usage. That's basically it's how I've coped for the past, God, I don't know how many years.
The two weed witches here.
I could even smoke on camera and it wouldn't be breaking the law.
That's very true.
That's true. That
not
true.
So much on my end.
Sorry. Yes, bless so
God. Gotta love those invisible lines. As I said, diagnosed anxiety, and borderline personality disorder. It actually, fun fact, my borderline personality disorder was actually misdiagnosed when I was a teenager as multiple personality disorder, which is now known as, dissociative identity disorder.
Identity disorder.
But this was back, in the early or mid 2000s. So they still, DID wasn't even a thing back then. As I said, really, it all stems from, I know so many, this seems so cliche saying this. A lot of people go through this. My parents got divorced when I was 3 years old, 4 years old. And basically when I was the only kid, when you're the only kid, the first thing your mind, like, what did I do to cause this? Like, why did this happen? Why is this going on? It also kind of was compounded by the fact that my mother was a lesbian. So mommy divorced daddy and then got with a woman. I'm like, that was before I knew obviously anything about myself. That caused just a ton of issues. My father literally slandered my mother in court to try to gain custody of me. Basically saying, like, this was the early 90s. They're like, you can't put my little girl with a lesbian. What'll happen? And it's just like, ooh, that does something to your brain, basically. I live with my grandparents just because my parents were feuding so much. Growing up, and then I came out at the tender age of 12, and I was in a Catholic school, and that only compounded more issues. And it wasn't really, God, I would say it wasn't until I was in my early 20s that I learned how to manage my mental health issues. and I say manage in a very loose term. I still have my days where it's just like everything is black and white and literally the world could end. And I'd be like, that's okay. And I'd be okay with that. It's, as I said, I didn't exactly have the, I don't want to say crutch is not a good word, but I didn't have magic to rely on. As I said, it really came down to pure self-will. And I do, when I was, especially when I was younger, going through my teenage years were very, 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 very difficult. Multiple suicide attempts. Really what helped me the most was having siblings and knowing and having that in the back of my head that I needed to be there for them. And God forbid if anything were to happen to my father and my stepmother, then like I would have to step up for them. And I was just like, I have to get myself in my own right headspace for them. It's been a lifelong thing, and it seems weird that there is still a stigma about mental illness. It doesn't make sense to me because I can't think of a single friend of mine that doesn't deal with something.
Yeah, like same.
Every single person in my generation and the generation below me, and even the generation above me, everyone seems to have something that they're dealing with, whether it's depression or anxiety or whatever. And for their stigma to still be attached to it, I can't wrap my head around it. Because it just seems like, it's like, oh, you have anxiety? Oh, I have depression. Like, oh my God, like, we're best friends now. So it really, that kind of throws me for a loop. but I'm glad we're doing this episode and that hopefully maybe this just makes like a small little crack in the stigma around it in both the queer and witchcraft community.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'll kind of go. So my family was very, I grew up very middle class, very just, I don't know, just, it is what it is. You eat what I give you. You do what I say. You do these things because I say so, you know, parental figures. My mother's, I joke about this now, but my mother's advice for when you feel like shit is stop feeling like shit, you know, like, you know, just, oh, hey mom, you know, I really feel like I could not wake up tomorrow and not care. Well, stop feeling that way. It's like, oh, okay. Thanks.
I'm fixed now.
So, exactly, I'm healed. Ta-da. Everything's better. So, for me, growing up, it was very much like that. I did have a younger sister. She's younger than me by 3 years. So, it was just the two of us. We were okay as kids. But basically, we kind of just had each other to rely on, which was good that I did have a younger sibling. But the problem is I'm the older sibling, so... it was like double pressure on me to set an example, to be the perfect kid and this and that. So I was always good in school. I was so good in school that I was terrified of authority figures. I was like, I have to do everything right. I had to be perfect is essentially kind of the mentality that was placed on me, is I have to be perfect and I have to succeed and I have to do all these things, for my sister. None of it was about me. And which is ironic now because as an adult, she's actually thriving a hell of a lot more than I am, like given everything that happened. And so I think me putting myself under that kind of pressure or that kind of pressure being put on me really affected me and my development as a, I don't want to say, I hate saying functional human being, but you know what I mean? Just as a, in the realm of success, so yeah, and then there's also the idea of, you know, of being a queer kid. So I was always very masculine, always, you know, everything like that. So if you look back, I mean, the signs were very obvious. According to my family, the signs were obvious that I'm a lesbian, quote unquote. Because even now they say, I always knew you were gay. And I'm like, okay. Okay. I always knew you were gay. All right, got it. But what's really interesting is my sister, who isn't really super feminine, she's just, you know, more feminine than me, she's a lesbian. And so, but she never had that sort of very obvious queer way about her. So I guess she kind of, I guess, straight passing. I guess if you want to call it that, she's straight passing.
Under the mine as well.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, when she tells people that she's engaged to a woman, they're like, oh my God, I had no idea. You know, it's like, I would have never known you were a lesbian. And it's just like, you know, like what you were saying with your therapist, Sophia, like, oh, if you were a real woman, it's like, wait, what? No, this is problematic language. This is horrible. We can't be doing this. Yeah. Oh, ridiculous. But so that's sort of the background that I came up with. If I started to crack under the pressure of trying to achieve perfection, I didn't really know how to express my emotions. And I still struggle with that of how to express myself. So as a kid, you know, my dad was like, hey, put your feelings in your pencil box and then forget about them. You don't need them. You don't need to deal with that. And then, because if you don't show emotion, then people can't hurt you. I was like, oh, okay, well, I don't want to get hurt by people. But what I ended up doing was actually just hurting myself mentally. So essentially, I grew up really emotionally stunted, I guess you could say. And expressing myself was very hard for me to do. And then sometimes when I would crack under that pressure, I would cry and I would punch things and I would throw things and I would just have this full on like meltdown. And then, you know, my dad would come in the room and be like, you want me to take you to a therapist? And like, it was a punishment, you know, like, what's wrong with you? I'll take you to a therapist. We'll figure out what's wrong with you. You know, they'll send you away and they'll fix you. And I was like, well, you know, it was just so then you learn to mask your quote unquote issues. You learn to mask it. And, yeah, just as a whole, mental health in my family overall is just really looked down upon. Recently, we had an issue come up in my family where one of my family members kind of just, I think they were just kind of like going on a bit of like a mental break. Just, you know, life was not going the way they wanted it to. And they all just couldn't be nice. They just couldn't be nice. And they're just incapable. And so even now as an adult, that's the family support system that I have. Even my sister, who is queer, who I fully believe she also has, she's got some kind of anxiety, OCD sort of, way about her. Even she like will be like, oh, therapy, therapist. No, let's not do that. You know, so that's the background that I have. And what's even more difficult is that as a kid, I always had a huge trouble expressing myself and how I feel. Like now I feel like I struggle with like crippling anxiety. I haven't been fully diagnosed with anything, like officially diagnosed with anything. But I would bet you that someone would be like, yeah, you've got some anxiety issues. That's for sure. Mm-hmm. And just in terms of expression, so I think it's December 6th will be like 4 months of me being on T. And ever since starting that, I didn't realize that some of the things that people said were true, that you can't cry. I can't cry anymore. And I feel even more emotionally stunted than I did before because I don't know how to express myself. When I get mad, I just want to punch things. And I know, but I'm an adult and I know that I can't just punch things. You know what I mean? So that's kind of like where I am right now. And I've been struggling with that. And another thing that was affecting me mentally was this malevolent force that I accidentally bestowed upon myself. Yeah. So that was also affecting my mental health as well. But now, I kind of want to get into that later in the episode of distinguishing malevolent energy
versus curses versus mental illness.
Yeah. So, but that's where I am. I think you guys are a bit more, I think you're a bit better at managing your own mental health or acknowledging it. And me, I just feel like I live in a constant state of denial and anger. So, I mean, that's just, that's just where I'm at. But yeah,
whatever
so,
works, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
What keeps you waking up in the morning? Yeah.
That's why I drink beer.
Differently too, you know, not everybody processes things in the same way, which is extremely important to take note of. So it's not a problem that you're different. It's like, that's the reason the whole universe exists, is so we can all be different little versions of us.
Mm-hmm. I think what works for me, and of course, you know, me and Joyce being in a relationship and everything, I think what works for me is like if Joyce is having a particularly rough day, I can just focus my attention on making sure that they're okay versus me worrying about myself, which isn't always healthy, but it helps me, you know? So, thank you.
It really does help to have a partner support, and I have issues with that because I've been single for way too long, and it definitely upsets me.
But yeah, so that's kind of like where everyone comes from. With mental health, that's sort of our origin point on this. For most of us, for me, Scott, and Sophia, it's really been magic because we had that. Joyce is different. They're kind of coming into it now. But I think we can all speak to mental health from a queer experience, most definitely.
Mm-hmm.
I would venture to say that the reason mental health is such a prevalent issue in our community, in the queer community, is societally imposed because of the way we are viewed and because of the way we are treated. Now, I know we talk a lot.
Thank you.
Okay, thank you. That's the episode. Goodbye, everyone.
I was literally about to be like, it's the patriarchy, and here's why.
You hit the nail on the head. Now this is all done.
It's a little bit of the patriarchy, a little bit of self-hate, a little bit of Catholic guilt. I know in my case. All that wrapped up together.
Exactly. So I think it's really societally imposed because imagine a world where no one gives a fuck, okay, about who you fuck or who you love or who you don't love or who you were with last night or how you dress or whatever the hell you're doing. Imagine a world where that doesn't matter. I would venture to say that mental health issues would not be as prevalent.
I agree.
As they are.
100%.
I think that's a very good point because so many people like to blame the individual for how they're.
I think that's what I'm getting at. Like, no, yeah. We shouldn't blame the person. We need to blame the bigger issue.
And it's true because like what's helped me too is like changing my surroundings, getting out of the areas where bad shit happened to me, just moving on, you know, letting things go. That's how you heal, is you move on or away from shit, you know? You don't have to keep it in you.
I say all the time, like, one of the things I notice about, like with gay men, and well, men who sleep with men, because they could be bi, they could be pan, you know? But anyway, I realize that, also probably lesbians too, is that, well, anybody that does, like, same-sex relationships, because of how society views our queer relationships in general, they always view us as less. We can never love each other as much as a heterosexual couple could.
Yeah, like, and who's the man?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like who's
and
the
I
man?
Think on, like, a socio-psychological level, we started to internalize that. So, in speaking of, like, internalized homophobia is a symptom. It is not necessarily – it's a symptom of the same thing as well, like one of the things I've been really reading about is how homophobia is just anti-woman. It's sexism because straight men don't care when a masked gay man or a straight passing gay man, you know, they don't mind it if he's like, yeah, bro, let's go and do this thing, blah, blah, blah. And then, you know, he goes home to his boyfriend. If he's like, yeah, bro, let's go take like beers and blah, blah, blah. And let's go watch football, blah. They don't care. But if you're like me, I'm like, well, I'd want to drink tea and talk about books. And, you know, they view these things as feminine. They gender things that probably shouldn't be gendered, but even my voice, you know, like I joke and say, you know, I have a lot of sugar in my voice, but I'm not ashamed of the fact that my voice is feminine. I'm not. I used to be ashamed of it, but I'm not. I don't do that anymore because I love that about myself, because a lot of people tell me that that's one of the things, my soft voice helps them to calm down. People have always told me, you know, like when you talk to me, and, you know, I keep like an even tone and people just are like, I can breathe. And I like that. I like that my voice can help someone in that way. And I'm not even trying, you know. So regardless of whether that's feminine or manly or whatever, you know, I just realize how much of, you know, even with queer relationships, as far as like our structure goes, our difficulty in maintaining romantic relationships. And it's funny because, you know, and this is not just, you know, this is not just monogamous relationships either. You know, queer people as a whole, we pride ourselves on our sexual liberation. Many of us are into BDSM, we have kinks, we have fetishes, and we are very proud of that. But the thing is that, you know, even people who celebrate alternative love styles or polyamory, I've also realized that it's not just monogamous queer people who have issues maintaining a cohesive relationship. People in polyamorous relationships, also in queer communities, also have problems maintaining stable relationships. You know, and it's because we start to also, and there's times where I've caught myself too, where I start to go, well, of course I can't, you know, I would think something along the lines of, well, of course I can't love him as much as, you know, Susie and Adam love each other, you know, like. And I'll be like, wait, what? You know, like, and I, you know, and it's funny because you always know where the conditioning is, right? You can always know the conditioned thought from your actual thought.
Yes.
The conditioned thought normally comes first and then your actual thoughts after. So much of the societally imposed mental illness, not even quoted, but mental illness is imposed upon queer people because of the sexist, patriarchal, annoyingly white, no diversity whatsoever, you know, like, and it's that's a large part. Plus, of course, I mean, I'm sorry, I'm rambling, guys. I'm so sorry.
Okay.
I'm just really passionate. Like, you know, we also have, like, obviously all the abuse that queer people go through, you know, there are what, 100 names on what is it, 356 trans women were killed this year in the US?
I try not to know the number because
I'm sorry.
Time. No, it's fine. It's just I've put a lot of time into paying attention to it, and after a while it becomes a lot to see all the time, so I try not to.
I'm not trans identifying at all, I'm cis, but I can't even read that list. I try not to, but
most of them are women of color. Let's state that.
They are, yeah.
Big issue in the trans community where a lot of white women go and say, oh, it could happen to any of us. But it's like statistically it doesn't happen to you. And you should actually like be listening to the people who are affected by this more. And I've witnessed a bit of that ugliness recently, even here in Toronto at the Transgender Day of Remembrance. Even though I wasn't there, some stuff went down, and yeah, it's shit. It sucks.
Yeah,
I think a lot of issues, especially when it comes to just existing in taking up space in this world. So just existing in within the parameters of society. So the issue I think that we come across, and this is really contributes to detrimental mental health things, is because if you are queer, you are perceived as you're trying to imitate
yeah
mm-hmm. heteronormative experience. Which is why with lesbians, it's like, well, who's the man? You know, who's the more butch, the more whatever. And also with gay men.
Who's the girl? That's so weird. So lesbians get who's the man. Gay men get who's the woman. So that's right. That's.
And trans men get you're still a lesbian. So I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Women get.
And then the people in the middle just get weird looks.
Yeah, they go, "Oh, who are you with? What?"
Yeah.
But I think. Yeah, I think it's because we're perceived as trying to imitate. We're perceived as trying. We're perceived as trying. We're not perceived as thriving. We're always perceived as trying to have what other people have. You know, like when we want to have children in queer relationships, it's always an uphill battle. It's always trying, because you can't. And so when you constantly tell someone that they are imitating a real experience, it affects your psyche to a point where you're like, oh, well, this must be, I'm not authentic. I'm not real. I'm not real. And then you start to completely disassociate from your own life. Like I know for me as a trans man, I'm going through that right now. Like the more that like if people misgender me and then they go, oh, I'm sorry, I mean bro or dude or whatever, it makes me feel that much worse, actually. And like the other day, my boss, he hurt his hand, so he was trying to pick up a box and he couldn't pick it up because his hand was hurt. And so I was like, you want me to pick it up? And he goes, yeah. So I pick it up. And he goes, oh, I'm so glad you're becoming a man.
You want me to stab your boss?
I mean, that is...
Oh, trust me, the opportunity's been there. I'm like,
So it's, and I kind of like was thinking to myself, I was like, okay, so he thinks I'm becoming a man, right? Okay. At what point do I become a man? At what point am I real to you?
It's really a gatekeeping game of when you live up to their like pre-imposed societal expectations.
Yes. Yes.
When I crush a beer can on my forehead, is that when I become a man?
Probably when you humiliate him. From what I've learned from being a pre-transition trans woman is men derive respect very often from direct clash and opposition. So I learned to protect myself by direct clash and opposition. Anytime someone's confrontational, they pick me out because I don't take their shit, because I learned pre-transition that just would get me killed, right? So with guys, you gotta, I don't know, it's like they're looking for conflict, and it's how you deal with it. It's like this expectation of manhood is you not taking their shit and putting them in their place, but without destroying their masculinity. If you emasculate them,
it is so fragile.
But like, say you get into a fist fight and you punch each other in the face a bunch and you beat him, right? But he'll look at you and you'll be like, oh, you got one in too, you're fine. I've literally had that talk with people, like, oh, don't worry about it, you made my nose bleed, you got one in, you're okay. And
see,
like,
that to they me is
just respect the shit out of you after.
It just seems barbaric, is really just where it, like,
have been punched in the face.
If I can also say, too, I also want it duly noted that, like, toxic masculinity is a mental health problem that is faced by kind of the people that we are angry at, but they're also, I mean, I know this is really hard to look at, but they're also victims. I know it's really hard, but it's true. There's science. I'm not just talking out of my asshole. Like, excuse my French. You know, like, and the problem is it really also, and like, I always say this, these, so many people want to look at these things like one-dimensionally. Like, they want to be like, well, I want to socially, you know, like social activism, which I'm all for, but the problem is that one-dimensional social activism is completely useless and creates stagnation and just keeps us going in the same spiral that we're continuously going. Everything is incredibly nuanced. There is no black and white. That is an illusion. There is only ever shades of gray, ever. I'm sorry, but I mean, in my personal opinion, I mean, obviously, don't get me wrong. I'm not trying to speak in absolutes because, like, personal life stuff, you know, like choices to make with money. I'm not talking about that stuff. I'm talking about, like, socially speaking, like society. It is. There's so much nuance. You know, how do you fight toxic masculinity? How do you fight transphobia? How do you fight xenophobia? How do you get people to understand that mental illness is not the person living with its fault? You know what I'm saying? Like, it becomes about, you know, intersectionality. You know, none of this is easy. You know, and I think, and don't get me wrong, I do this too. I perpetuate this. We're like, I'm like, oh, it's so easy. Why can't we just do this? But the problem is that it's not. It's really not easy. You can logic it until you're blue in the face. And don't get me wrong. I mean, it's going to take thinkers. It's going to take shakers and move makers to make things happen. But the problem is that there's so much nuance to the way we think, why we think it. Years, centuries of conditioning. Our DNA holds on to what our forefathers had. You know, we now know that our DNA has memory, you know? Like, well, of course, we knew that before then because witchcraft. But anyway, I won't go there because I know that's what you're going to get. That was a good. I love when you do that. I love when we're on the same page. But yeah, I'm sorry. I get very passionate, guys. I'm so sorry.
It's okay. Nothing to be sorry about. I mean, I would rather you be passionate about that than something else. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
that's kind of why we're here.
Society sucks. Sorry.
Yeah. So go ahead. Please.
Speaking of language, I don't care about my motherfucking nose. I don't care about my language, but no, society, especially. I guess I can kind of. Don't want to say offer a viewpoint, considering how freshly out I am as GNC. But it's like society, like it is trying to find your way in a world that literally wants to split itself in half, and trying to tread that line in between those two worlds. That alone is enough to cause mental health issues in any sane person.
Totally.
Everywhere you turn, it's like I think what we were at Michael's, and they got coloring books for boys and girls. Like, why does it matter? Like,
that drove me nuts.
Yep.
What? It makes no sense. There's gendered toothpaste. There's gendered Band-Aids. There's, like, it's just, why? Why do we put this importance on some, like, it just, not to go on a rant myself, but.
No, because whenever I see, like, gender reveal videos, I'm just like, shut up. Like, go.
Yeah, y'all fucking step off.
I know, exactly.
The guy that caused
the
wildfire with his stupid sex reveal party, like. Oh my gosh.
You know, but, so there's another issue here, okay? Now, there's another layer to, now I'm saying that the reason why we have a lot of mental health issues in the queer community is because of, I don't know, fuck the patriarchy, right? So it's because of them, whoever they are, right? Mm-hmm. But we also have people in our community that make it even worse.
Yeah.
And Scott had actually, like, not even an hour before we started recording this, Scott dropped a little link in our little Facebook group chat. What's her name? Leah Delari, right? Yeah. It was like a clip from an interview that she was doing, and she was talking about LGBTQ, the alphabet soup that is the LGBTQ plus QIA, whatever. It could go on for ages. And as a queer person, I joke about it because I'm like, oh yeah, the LGBTQs and the LMNOPs, and like I laugh about it because, you know, that's me and I'm an asshole. But she was saying, and I completely agree with her because, I mean, we even brand ourselves as a queer witchcraft podcast. We use the term queer, and that incorporates all of the letters that you could put in that LGBTQ whatever that is. That includes everything. Some people do not like the word queer, and for that, I apologize. I apologize in the sense of like I'm sorry that you don't embrace that word, but over time and today, I've noticed a lot more people embracing the term queer, and that is covering everything. But the problem is that we have people in our queer community that are perpetuating the same problems, just like Scott was saying about men who love men that were fetishizing bigger guys, or people fetishizing trans women. And they could be, and some of these could be cis women who are lesbians fetishizing trans people. It's not just because you're queer, you are not exempt from being an asshole.
No.
You're not exempt from being the problem. And some of it, like, now I know I have, like, we all have our own brand of internalized homophobia or internalized transphobia. And sometimes, we think it, but we don't necessarily practice it. We don't preach it because, and I mean we, as in, like, the four of us here right now, we acknowledge when those moments happen. But we don't act on it because we realize it just comes from, conditioning and all these kinds of things. We realize where this comes from. Like, I could never imagine, like, a younger trans man coming up to me, a trans boy, whatever, saying, oh, well, how do I become like you? Or how do I be a real man? Like, how do I be a real man? And I'm just... I could never imagine like that gatekeeping or the this or like, oh yeah, well first you have to go to a doctor and then you have to blah blah blah. It's not, there's no rules. There's no rules in how to exist. We just exist. And in the queer community, we've created rules within our own community. Mm-hmm. Like if you're going to if you were assigned male at birth and you're going to transition to female, you better learn how to do your makeup. You better, it's just like this idea of like, you better like super, super. And if you like those things, that's fine. But it's just this idea of like, you better do this or you'll never achieve what you want. They'll never see you. So we've created our own toxic guidelines. We've created our own toxic rules to assimilate into society, and it's not going to work. It's just completely not going to work. And within our own community, I think before we start reaching out and saying fuck the patriarchy and all this kind of stuff, we need to look in first, because
to look at all the division in our community. Absolutely. We divide ourselves all the time. I mean, let's be real. I mean, you have to understand, I know the gay male community, because that's obviously that's the division, right? Because I always talk about the gay male community because that's what I know, because it's more straight people that think this, but there's still straight people that think that gay men and lesbians don't get along. Like,
vampires and werewolves or something,
which, I mean, don't get me wrong. There is the only reason they think that is because, back during the 80s, when the feminist movement was growing, it was very, very lesbian. And it was at the same time when gay men started fighting for for research in the AIDS and they needed help. And unfortunately, they were very, the feminists were kind of like, well, you're just because you're gay doesn't mean that you're, and they didn't like, it was just biting heads. And that's why they think that it was just from an old cultural weirdness and that totally passed. But one thing that I, for some reason, I feel like this fits in with this. My boyfriend, Darian, he's bisexual and cisgender, but, this is his makeup palette.
His makeup for Pride. It looked so good.
He used to love doing his makeup before, and this part upsets me, and he'll tell you, because I've asked him. I said, have I ever shown you any reason to think that I would somehow respect you less or respect your identity less if you wore makeup? And he's like, no, it's just bi men already have a hard enough time. He's like, you know, because he, like, the other day he was like, he was talking about his percentages. And he's like, you know, you're no longer bi if you're, you know, if you prefer men.
If you lean.
Yeah, he's, and I'm like, that, you know, I sent him a GIF. It was like this pie chart, and it had like all different bi percentages, and at the top it says still bisexual. And you know, because I told him, no one gets to tell you what your, like, you, that's your identity. You say that. So, you know, you don't have to prove yourself. You know, when he has these preconceived notions because of experiences he's had with gay men in the past. You know, like, oh, that's not masculine enough for a bi man to do his makeup. That's something a gay man would do.
Yeah.
Like, he's still queer. He's still queer. Like, it doesn't matter. And the reason I emphasize that is just because I think that queer people, one of our positive things is the ability for us to just kind of be like, I don't really care. You know, like, I really want to get into wearing shawls and shawl scarves and stuff like that. I love that kind of hedge witch kind of aesthetic. Yeah, I love that, but it is very feminine. But I the thing is that I shouldn't feel some type of way, like I shouldn't, which I will be. I'll be afraid to step out of my house when I start doing that because
Scott, like, okay, so look at you physically. So you're a bigger guy, you have this gigantic beard, right? And then you open your mouth and then everyone's like very taken aback, you know what I mean? So, but no one should so, like, according to what people perceive you at face value, you should be like, yeah, we're gonna go, you know, go to the gym or whatever the case is, or crush beer cans on her forehead. But instead, you're very soft, and I think you would look absolutely very cute with the shawls, scarves, whatever you want to do. You're gonna look great.
Very Stevie Nicks of you.
I know.
She's a witch. I don't care what she says. Anyway.
She is.
I can attest to that, though, because, like, when I was trying on femininity, any slight deviation from societal expectation is met with harsh reprimand, you know? Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter if it's a shawl or something with a little bit of lace or... Like, I was even asked why my hair was so long, and I had a beard, a comparable size to Scott's, not going to lie. And people would still question why my hair was so long.
And they're like, do you see this on my face? Why does this matter?
I was certainly using that beard as a mask.
As a beard.
The fact that I was growing my hair out to prep for transition, but that's another topic. But, like, there's that serious extreme reprimand where, like, you can be met with physical, attack if people don't like your expressions of femininity. And I think it really drives home what Scott was saying earlier, where a lot of homophobia is, in a way, an attack on femininity and an expression other than the expected male traits that society has socialized as male. And, like, I gotta say, there's so many things I picked up after, like, 3 years, almost four now, into my transition that I threw out in the beginning because I thought, oh, it's too masculine. I don't want to do that anymore. And then I found out I really love doing martial arts. It doesn't have to be mask. It's just something society has told us it is, you know? Mm-hmm. We don't always challenge that and see that stuff is just stuff. And if it feels good and we want to do it, well, why would you not, you know?
Right.
Like, fuck everybody else's idea of who you should be.
No, for sure. Yeah. Going back to what Scott was saying, to go back to that, the, like, personally, obviously, experience the bi and pan erasure amongst our little alphabets is absolutely ridiculous. It's just like, I was bi all through high school and early college, and it's like, well, you just haven't made up your mind yet, and it's like, why are you, like, nobody has any right, like, you don't know what's going on in here. Nobody knows what's going on in here except me. And it's just right. Like,
yep.
it can be so damaging. And again, also branching into the whole gender thing. And it's like, people just automatically want to assume that it's either this way or that way. And there's no in between. And it's just, it's crazy. It's absolutely crazy that society can cause such a dissonance in your head. You're just like, but that's one thing I always advocate. Like, people, even still, my friend came out as, my best friend came out as pan while I was still bi, when I was still identifying as bi, as I guess you could say. And even me, I was just like, what the heck's that? And it's just like, I really feel like I don't like to take up like the personal torch or flag or whatever, but it's like people need to be educated. That's really like what it comes down to. Like, if I could like go across the country with a goddamn PowerPoint and like educate people, like, I feel like that would help out a lot. Just because people really don't, they're so enclosed in their own little bubbles, and they don't realize that anything exists outside of that bubble. And if people could see what actually is outside, a lot of people would be a lot nicer.
To go off of that point about education, I had a developmental psych professor who I absolutely despised. She was transphobic, homophobic, even though she claimed she wasn't. She was racist. She was all these things. But she said one thing that I still agree with, and that is simply that when people don't know better, they will do better when they know better. People need to be educated. If they don't know any better, they're going to continue to do the same things until they learn. And that I agreed with. I do completely agree with you, Joyce, as far as education goes. There needs to be more queer sensitivity training and teaching people about queer history. Like, I'm totally loving Scotland right now because they're making queer history and queer like studies part of their school curriculum. And I was like, you know.
What I think would be even better than, because I remember, and so I just want to preface this with my dad is pretty, he's pretty racist. He's pretty homophobic. He's pretty everything phobic, racist, whatever.
Mine too.
Yeah. So when I was in 10th grade, public school system, or I think it was the state, I can't remember what they were, if it was the city or the state at that point. Anyway, so they said that we had to take a class which was centered on African American history, like, or African American studies, I think is what they called it. So it was a whole class, you know, a whole class, not just like a section or a chapter in a book, or it was a whole history class about African American history. And my dad was very opinionated about it. He was like, well, why should my kid, he wasn't saying this at school, you know, this is one of those dinner ranting conversations, you know, where you have a mouthful of food and you're angry. Yeah. So, you know, why should my kid have to study about, have to have a whole, sit through a whole class about those people? And I was like, Dad, that's really messed up. Like, it's just a history class. But what I think some of the issue is that if we just incorporated all of this into one history class, like queer history, you know, people of color, minority, you know, like all these things, if this was all just incorporated into one human experience narrative, it would be a lot different. Mm-hmm. You know, it would be like so-and-so and their wife, you know, like female name and wife, or, you know what I mean? Like, it would normalize it.
To normalize, yeah.
And I know exactly, we talk so much about, we talk so much on this podcast about that sacred otherness, and I completely get behind that. But at the same time, if we weren't othered so much, we probably wouldn't have a lot of these problems that we experience. Because the problem is our society does not embrace other. It ostracizes other.
The problem is too, though, is, and I'm not like saying that this, we're wrong for this, but we're angry. Like, queer people, black people, oppressed people, we're angry. We're tired of being pacifists. We're tired of, you know, well, if they're bullying you, just don't say anything. No, shut the fuck up, you fucking asshole. Like, go drop dead. Like, I'm done, you know, I'm done being nice. And that's the problem. That's also, I mean, it's a problem, but we're rightfully angry. It's justified anger. You know what I'm saying? I keep doing this by accident, but it's justified anger. And, you know, so of course that also makes it difficult though, because they've pushed us so far. We're kind of like, now we're just like, well, you're just disgusting. You know, you've abused, you've killed our children. You've killed the smallest of us all. You know, you've killed, tons of trans people. You know, they've killed these teenage gay kids, you know, like it. And I'm not saying I'm this angry, but I'm just saying this because I'm trying to emulate the anger that I think as a community, as a queer community, we feel now. So of course that also will build up a wall, because now we're not ready to hold a space where we're ready to communicate in a diplomatic or civil way. Cause now we're ready for, I guess, you know, war, you know? And I'm not saying that's right.
I completely agree. And because of all of this, and because of all of this oppression and otherness and everything like that, it really just perpetuates any existing mental health things that are there and can really exacerbate and grow them, to almost like a parasitic in nature. So I'm not saying that, you know, someone can just be, I'm not saying like, yeah, if you make people nice, the mental health problems will go away. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is that it can make it a hell of a lot easier to deal with.
Yeah, completely.
So instead of having like crippling anxiety about, you know, you could have anxiety about other things, but leaving your house, you know, if you're wearing a scarf or a shawl, Scott, like that, to have that anxiety for that may not be there. If that was not an issue, you know, you might have anxiety about something else. Like, oh, I really hope I don't miss my bus. I can't miss my bus. I can't miss my bus, or whatever the case is.
Or even with you, when you were trying to choose a bathroom at the gym a few weeks ago, Remember when you texted me and you weren't sure which bathroom at the gym to use?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Mm-hmm. So, and I, even now, like when I do, like I kind of flip depending on where I am, especially because I kind of can go either way right now. If I walk into a men's room, I don't really get looks. If I walk into a women's room, I actually, now I'm at the point where I get more looks if I walk into a women's room.
Yeah.
Versus a men's room. So, but the men's room's always really filthy, but that's a whole other fucking societal issue that I have.
Oh God. You can't pee in there.
Why is there pee everywhere? That's all I want to know. Thank you.
Men can't aim.
Why?
Because men were socialized to stand up instead of just sitting down.
It's so much easier just to sit down. I mean, just, anyway. Anyway, that's subscribe to the Patreon, and I'll go on a whole rant about the men's room
tonight. Episode
tonight, right?
The haunting that those people midnight. Are dealing with, and washroom terror.
So I think we've talked a lot about mental health in terms of from a queer perspective. I do kind of want to touch a little bit on mental health in the witch community. Again, there is also division within the witchcraft community. There are people who are way more privileged and, you know, just have come from a more privileged position, that will say problematic things like, you know, if you do have mental health issues, your magic is not as effective.
Or not at all.
And then there are people outside of the witch community that are like, well, you know, how can you possibly, you know, have anxiety, but also do healing magic? Or how can you have, BPD or something like that and do readings effectively? Like, is it legitimate? Is it real? And again, it comes down to authenticity and being real, which then causes you to dissociate from your own magic or dissociate from your own your sort of magical identity. So I kind of just wanted to touch on that. In that, I think I internalize this a lot in my own magic, and I am a victim of that mentality, because I am still a huge skeptic of magic and my own magic. And I think a lot of that stems from, you know, well, am I just making this up? Am I just making this up? It's sort of like anxiety in a way, or just this little other voice in my head, you know, that's the voice that always wants to sabotage you no matter what.
Of course.
And that I have all the time. So, you know, when I do a spell, there's that little voice starts to go, that didn't really work. It's not going to work. Why are you kidding yourself? It's not real. So that is what I still struggle with, even as a practicing witch, even as someone who runs this goddamn podcast about witchcraft, I struggle with that. And so if I just want to say that if there's anyone out there who is new or has, you know, been doing witchcraft for a long time, if you still have that voice in your head, it's okay, because I'm sure a lot of us out there also experience that, but you're still valid. Your voice, your magic is still valid. Scott, you look like you kind of wanted to say a couple things on that.
No, I just, you know, I mean, for someone who talks about how I know in magic, right, you know, I don't believe in magic anymore just because of all of my experience. But I was a friend of mine who is Luciferian, who had a family friend who was a priest, a Catholic priest. And this Catholic priest was very accepting of magical traditions. He was half Hispanic, and his family was practitioner Santeria. And, you know, he said to him, and he may have been quoting somebody else, but he said to this friend of mine, along the lines of, like, basically a spiritual man, you're almost more spiritual if you question. Questioning everything is what we're supposed to do. Magic wants you, like, it wants to be questioned. Magic, if it was a thinking thing, wants to build strong-minded people. It wants you to think. And if that means questioning it, question it. Ask the hard questions. That's what we're supposed to do. That's something a spirit worker really needs to learn. And that's something I struggle with in my own practice, is always asking the right questions. I don't even... Shit. Sometimes I'm just kind of like, I conjure them. I'm like, right, I have to ask you something. I conjured you for a reason, you know, and I have to like come up with something, you know, like I have to dialogue. And the thing is like, I don't always have, I'm not, you know, like I am, I like to, I think that I'm emotionally intelligent, but I'm not like the brightest bulb, you know what I'm saying? Like, I'm nobody's fool, but I'm not a genius, you know? So, I mean, yeah, I get it. You know, I get the little voice, and yeah, I was just agreeing.
I think it's, sorry.
Yeah. No,
me
ahead.
Personally, coming from the newbie witchlet perspective, I think the thing that I struggle the most with, especially growing up, was... And I'm sure a lot of people, and touching on what Scott said, especially people that I guess are more sensitive to the spiritual side of things, is that constant debate and that constant struggle of, is this something actually talking to me? Is this something I'm actually seeing? Or is this just my fucked up brain making something up?
Yeah, I've done that, yeah.
Constant, it's just like... And thank God, like, I seriously, thank God I have a reasonable explanation now. I say reasonable, explanation.
Pretty reasonable to me.
Reasonable to everyone here.
Exactly. For some of these things that I've experienced, and I know a lot of people have experienced, because otherwise... God, I would have probably self-diagnosed as schizophrenic years ago. it's definitely, if anything, it is helped. I guess helped soothe or calm my own. Questioning about what I'm actually seeing and what I'm actually hearing and what I'm actually feeling, and that there can be a reason beyond I'm just crazy behind all of that.
I
have the opposite problem of probably all of you, in that I, like I said earlier, like I always feel like emotionally stunted, or like I never like emotionally developed fully. And I think, because of that, when it comes to, like spirit work or spirit communication, you know, I don't feel it like you guys do. I don't hear those voices. I feel something, but that's about it. You know, it's very muffled. It's very mute. And that also makes me feel like less of a witch.
Yeah. If I could reply to that, honestly, I have that go off and on for me. I deal a little bit with the whole struggle of, am I crazy? Because sometimes it's some weird shit that happens, and it's so weird I don't actually go into full detail about most stuff on podcast, because I've kind of been reprimanded before in life from talking very blatantly about it. And sometimes I just don't feel it when I'm depressed or I feel broke down. I don't have the energy to do a spell. I struggle with meditation because I can't block everything out all the time.
I agree. Meditation's really hard for me.
Yeah. Do not mistake me as somebody who doesn't struggle with in practice, because even as Joyce was saying, having magic to rely on, sometimes I've even felt like magic is more of a curse than a blessing, because I can't really run from my shit. When you really learn how you work and what your actions cause, you can't run from your shit like you might be able to otherwise. And it always kind of forced me to look at stuff in a way that was unpleasant. And even when I didn't have a solution to a way out, there was always the question of, why is my magic working? Why can't you cast your way out of this one, you know? And I think
yes,
important to struggle. It's important to fail and learn what works. And like, if I were to name my path, it would be the path of the lost, because it's the person who wandered and didn't have answers from anybody else and got lost and didn't know where the hell they were going. And in that journey, that's how you find yourself. And that's how I've kind of been. So like, even recently, I've just been feeling more of a magical presence because of doing daily workings. But before, say, 3 days ago, I was still feeling like absolutely disconnected. And it comes in bouts as I like learn what works for me and what doesn't, and listen to the subtle cues of the universe and the spirits talking in the ways that I've learned that they do. Because it's not always a voice subtly whispering in your ears saying, do this thing. Sometimes it's a crazy random person who comes up to you and screams shit face, and you have to look at yourself and be like, well, what did I cause to have this happen? You know, there's like a uniting philosophy behind magic that you're causing a lot of stuff that's happening, and whether or not you want to, you draw experiences towards yourself sometimes.
Synergy and synchronicity.
Yeah. And that also ties into my mental health, because I've struggled with that as someone who's been through a ton, and I've asked why me so many times. And the answer that in the end kept me satisfied was because I wouldn't be who I am now without it. And I'm happy in the end, and I'm lucky to be able to say this, but I'm glad that I struggled and came out the other side stronger than having not known hardship and just been carried
away.
I feel more assured in myself through the struggle and the affirmation of having to get through it than any amount of ease ever could have given me, you know? And magic wasn't necessarily a crutch. It was something I struggled with as well. And it was a journey too, and it still is. And I'm not this crazy ascended witch priestess, you know? I'm still figuring my shit out and trying to get my books written and get all my stuff done, you know?
I always feel like that's my goal. Witchcraft is to be so centered and, you know, at all times, and just for someone to look at me and be like, wow, you are just like the poster boy for like perfect witch, you know. I want that, but I don't think I'll ever achieve it. I think it's just because like the anxiety that I have, the like any like primer, like witchcraft book you read, it's always like, get some crystals and meditate, you know, and then it, only if you can meditate, then you can move on to spell work. And
that's the hardest step.
And I'm like, that is not beginner shit at all. That is, honestly, I would almost venture to say backdoor your way into it, you know, do a little spell, whatever, like you lost your keys, do a little chant to find your keys, do magic first, and then control, bring in the control later.
I agree. During Renaissance period of magic, in grimoires, spells were called experiments. Yes, during Renaissance period, spells were called experiments in some of their grimoires, a lot of their grimoires. Magic is a divine science. I always love calling spells. It's the math of the gods. You know, it's how they put the universe together. God, it's God. The equation, and we're putting it together. You know, I agree with that. Doing magic first, see if it works. See how it works. If it doesn't work, try it again.
Especially for if you are a person that does have similar, I guess, similar mental health issues to what we kind of discussed here, that really works. And honestly, because Joyce, you're actually getting into witchcraft and stuff now, I've kind of done that with you without really intending to. I kind of just threw you into the magic part.
Sorry.
I learned how to swim by done. Is that what you said, Sophia?
Think or swim.
You're swimming so far, just so you know. You're doing
it. It literally mirrors my life, because I literally learned how to swim by jumping in the 8-foot section of the pool. It was just like, wee! Sorry, no, I was just going to say, I was just going to comment on the whole meditation bit. I literally can't make the voices shut up long enough to meditate. They're just, it's just like, even if I say, don't think of nothing, then they go off of that and they're like, well, what about this and what about this? And it's just like, I have never, ever been able to find inner quiet, like, ever.
Well, if I can, there's a couple things. One, don't ever try. This is for all of our people. Don't try to steal your thoughts. It's biologically impossible. Find the stillness between your thoughts. You can never quiet the mind fully. The mind is always going to chatter because that's the mind's function. One of my favorite techniques to reach mindfulness was actually perfected with me by my therapist, which is a simple mindfulness technique in which you either sit on the floor or you sit in a chair, preferably with like a relatively straight back chair, but it doesn't really matter. And you just take a nice deep cleansing breath, breathe out slowly. And what you do is you just feel the pressure of your feet on the floor, feel your buttocks on the chair or the floor, feel your palms on your knees, feel the pressure of your head as it, you know, hangs down, feel the rise and fall, just breathe normal, and you feel the rise and fall of your chest, and you just breathe normally, and you just feel, if there's a breeze, you just feel it on your skin, and all of a sudden, you reach a stillness by finding in the moment, right? And then all of a sudden you're able to kind of go deeper, and you take that. So that, Joyce, that's just something for you to try. Another thing too, as far as spirit work goes, and because we were talking, because I also struggle with, am I crazy when I'm communicating with spirits? Am I just creating that language by myself? But I had a really interesting technique that I learned, while in a sort of relaxed state, I started realizing this exercise called on you. I could actually have you guys kind of do this right now if you wanted to. You would close your eyes and I would name off objects and you would tell me where it feels like in your brain those thoughts are coming from, like literally which way from your brain. So if you guys want to try it, like you'll feel a direction where your thoughts are coming from. So Sophie, you're doing it. Close your eyes.
Okay.
So if you want to.
No, All right. I'm in.
All right. So, school bus. Stop sign. Nemo from Finding Nemo. Pencil. Chalkboard. Pen. Marble notebook. Cell phone. And then you guys might be able to realize where those images were coming from.
So there was no motion with me. It appeared in the center. And when I stopped thinking of it, it ceased to be there and something else would just replace it.
So it would just kind of be like...
It would just appear in the center.
Just right here? So you didn't feel it coming from somewhere?
No, just like, if anywhere, it would be coming from a distance towards my vision.
Towards you? Okay. Well, I mean, that's... But still, what that means is, what happens is, and I realize, when I think of something, I realize my general thoughts, you kind of feel a direction. And whether that's actually happening or not, it's not the point. The point is, I always feel psychic stuff is coming this way. So I always kind of lean my head sideways. So when I'm hearing spirit communications coming this way, when it's just a general thought, it's coming from front to back. And it sounds weird. It really is strange when you talk about it, but it's just a sensation that you're looking for. And I always notice that when a thought feels like it's coming this way, that I can tell that it's something that I would think, right? But when it's coming this way, I'm realizing it's a fully formed sentence that I wasn't thinking about at all. So like when I'm talking to a spirit of a deceased person for a client and they give me a name, I'll say Sarah, but Sarah comes from this way, so sideways, diagonal back, right? And then, like, if I start going, oh, well, I'm seeing, because I have, like, a tissue box here. And I'm going, oh, well, I start seeing, like, a tissue box. But then I start going, oh, you know, then I realize that I know what I'm putting into psychic vision and what's actually coming to me from spirit. It's really weird, but when you sit down and you try it for yourself, it actually starts to make sense. I know it sounds really strange and it's peculiar, but
it works. See, mine's almost all over my brain. They come from different, like, it's not just one defined thing. It was just like, it was like if my brain was quartered.
GNC!
Yeah, right. Exactly. Exactly. Nothing is clearly defined. Nothing.
Of course, everyone is different and everyone is going to have things that work for them. You know, like I never ground. I can never ground with that general roots into the ground thing that never really worked for me very well. Yeah. So, I mean, we're all going to find. Huh?
I just banish. I drop out of lesser banishing of the ritual pentagram before I do most anything.
Yeah. But those are just a little something.
I think we talked about a lot. There's really more we can go into. We could honestly do a part two to this, because I'd like to get into more of the how to distinguish what is mental health complications versus malevolent forces or malevolent magic or curses and things like that. But honestly, I really feel like that can have an episode all of its own.
Yeah.
And maybe the following episode after this, I'm not sure, just since we're like on the topic. And we've also, we've gotten some communication from people about they're running into some, issues with that. So, yeah, plus I just recently went through that, so I'd kind of like to talk on my experience on that versus, you know, because I felt like I was going crazy, and then Scott was like, no, you're cursed, and I was like, oh, okay. So, but that can really have an episode all of its own, because I think this is probably approaching an hour and a half, I think, if my calculation is correct, and I don't want this to go on too long. So, I would say that this has been the first half of like our mental magic and mental health, or just queer witches and mental health. Yeah, Scott.
There's also, everybody, just so you know, there's going to be links to an article and a video. Videos from YouTube, and the article is on Patheos. The article is called Navigating the Mental Health Industry While Having Mystical Experiences. And the other one is by the author Thorne Moody on mental illness and the craft. So the video is, yeah. So just so y'all know.
Yes. And Scott, you'll put those links in the thing, and I'll put them in the thing, and then everyone will have links to the thing. And that's how that works. Another thing that I am going to do, I am going to follow up with a little video on Patreon for you guys, because I know we talk about Patreon, but we don't really tell you what we're going to be putting on Patreon. So I'm actually going to – when I did Wicca 101, it was this class that a friend of mine did – well, is now a friend of mine because he did the class. One of the first things he had us do was – and this is – I saved it from all these years – was the self-care pentagram.
Ah.
And basically it just goes through the five elements, because it includes spirit as well as an element, and it asks you a bunch of questions, then you put a mark in the questions, and then you give yourself a total, and then you see like kind of which element you should kind of like work on or what you're good with. So I'm going to do a little video about that, and that's going to be on the Patreon for everyone to
do.
I
love that.
So, but what I'd also like to do with the four of us, if we wanted to do it, we don't have to do it tonight. It's getting late tonight. We don't have to do it tonight. But maybe tomorrow we could do a quick little recording of the self-care pentagram and, you know, that'll be a fun little thing to put on Patreon. Speaking of which, let's just go through the list here. We have Patreon, we have Reddit, which Joyce, so lovingly and
thank you
operates. y'all need to get in there and start talking, because it's like a ghost town in there. And that's not...
I post weekly discussion threads, it's, like
there's like tumbleweeds like blowing through.
Yeah, right. Exactly. It's really, it's a great little area that if you guys wanted to like share posts or share pictures or share whatever you want to share, art, whatever, it's a great little place that anything which is betwixt related can go up on there and get input from the rest of the community. As I said, yes, it's kind of bare right now, but we're growing, we're expanding, and it's really cool. And so yeah, you should definitely go visit it.
Yes. Get your butts in the Reddit.
And we want to hear your experiences. We love when y'all write us. We will. I promise we will read.
Exactly. And really the Reddit community is really the way to do that, because it's a forum. It's a message board, essentially. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So you could just post in there and we can all talk about it. It's not just something like a Twitter message. You know, unless you want it to be, you know, more private and personal, that's completely fine. But yeah, we definitely encourage you to get onto the Reddit and talk with other queer witches. I mean, that's the whole point of this podcast, is to create this queer witch community. The other thing we have is we're on Spotify, we're on Google Play. That's how you can listen to us. That's how you can listen to the audio only version of the podcast. Buzzsprout? Video version. What's that?
Buzzsprout.
And also on Buzzsprout as well. I think most people just usually listen to it through like one of the syndicated things, but you can listen to Buzzsprout directly. I did actually look into Apple Podcasts, and Apple, even though they're a multi-billion-dollar corporation, their website is shitty and horrible. And there's an infinite login loop bug with Apple Podcasts and Buzzsprout. So, hey, Apple, get your shit together. Thank you. What else do we have?
Instagram.
We're on Instagram.
Facebook.
I'm on that Insta.
Yes. Instagram, Facebook. We do the tweets. We do all the things. Yeah, we do everything. I don't think I missed anything. Anyway, but the Patreon content is something that we're really going to start to, we're going to start to tease on social media, because we would really like you guys to get in on the Patreon stuff, because we're going to be posting some really cool stuff on there that you will not be able to find anywhere else. With that, I think we are going to end this episode. It has been a great time. No one cried.
I know.
We were all like, oh my god, I'm going to cry.
This I had these for this reason.
Not that crying is bad. Crying is fine. No, I haven't been able to cry for 4 months. It's fine. it's real. It really happens. But yeah, so we're all okay. I think we've been burning our incense, and you know, we're all going to do a little bit of self-care after this.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to do the self-care pentagram maybe tomorrow or whatever next day we have. But yeah, so I think I'm going to end the episode here. I just want everyone to be kind to each other, practice compassion, and don't be an asshole. And thank you for watching this.
Thank you.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
Hello, everyone. Scott here. I've been reading tarot for over 10 years. I am an intuitive reader, and through my readings, I try to give guidance to aid my clients in navigating their lives. To schedule a reading with me, you can find me on Facebook at Witchwise Seer and Witch. You can also find me over on Instagram and Tumblr with the handle Witchwise, spelled WYTCHWYSE. You can find links to all of my social media in the show notes. I hope to hear from you.